keeps crossing our wires every week.
The 3RWJ on the Canada Hub, standing by for the Science Bay.
The 3OUA.
EA3DLU, with third-party traffic as well, standing by for the Science Net.
VE3OUA, standing by for the Science Net, too.
VE3LTP, standing by for the Science Net as well.
And good evening, everyone. And apologies, I'm a minute or two late here this evening. Good evening, afternoon, morning, amateur radio operators. This is a Science Tech Net. It's held each Saturday 9 p.m., 0100 hours from my location here, Toronto, Ontario, Canada. The net coordination station for tonight's meeting is VA3KX, name is Ken, and I'll be operating as the net control for this evening's net for my home located in South Etobicoke, Ontario, Canada. The net's a forum to provide members a means to discuss science, technology, practice, become familiar with the radio network. Specific information to help get new amateur radio operators on the air. And this is initially a check-in that the initial call out for any stations listening that would like to participate. And when checking in, please give your call sign slowly, a first name, and a general location where you're transmitting from. If any questions or comments or announcements, just let me know when you're checking in. Dropping.
V3LTP, Victor Echo 3, Lima Tango, Papa. Larry at Bathurst and St. Clair in Toronto.
Victor Echo 3, Romeo Whiskey Juliet, Chris in Ancaster, just checking in.
Sierra Sierra Romeo, check in. 3 Alpha Juliet Fox.
3 OUA, check in.
VA 3 DLU, Victor Alpha 3 Delta Lima Uniform, and with third party traffic, checking in.
Bravo Wayne in Mississauga.
JM 4 UJP, Kilo Mike 4 Uniform Juliet Papa, John Julie Oscar November, St. George Island, Florida, on the Gulf of Mexico. Back to net.
This Alpha. Kilo Bravo 2, Foxtrot Alpha, Carl, New Jersey.
Victor Alpha 7, Juliet Bravo.
Kilo Alpha 4, Delta X-ray Quebec, KO4, DXQ, Bob in Tennessee.
Okay, we'll hold it here for a sec. I may have missed one, maybe two, but I think I've probably missed one. VE3LTP, VE3RWJ, VE3SSR, VE3AJF, VE3OUA, KB2FA, VE3FMB, I think it was K4, was it UJT? You might want to come in again with that. I may have got that one wrong, VA7JB, and KO4VXQ. There was another one in there, too, and I got a VA3, and it sounded like a D. There was a D, maybe a U in the suffix there. If you'd like to come in again.
Yeah, it's Victor Alpha 3, Delta Lima Uniform. Name is Duncan, and I've got third-party traffic. My son Brendan is here as well, calling from North York in Toronto.
All right, I got you in that time. I wasn't too far off. All right, any additional stations, come on in. I'll take a few more, then I'll run through the topics tonight, and right after that I'll stop for any additional check-ins, even comments, and then we'll start the net. This is EA3CAC, Ken here, Science and Tech Net, and transmitting from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. If you'd like to join us here, come on in.
DE3KDZ.
Victor Echo 3, Gulf Foxtrot X-ray.
Victor Echo 3, HJQ.
This is 4 Kilo Echo Juliet, East Tennessee.
Okay, let's hold it here for a sec. There was a couple of doubles there. Where did I lose everyone here? I got V3KDZ. There's a station coming in just before that, if you could come in again, and then there was another station coming in around the same time John came in, VK3HJQ. But let's go with that station first. There was one came in just before KDZ. It had KO4DXQ, then there was VE3KDZ, and there was a station just in between those two. There was a, when Chris was coming in, and I'll just put a mark there. I'll wait and see. You may come in a few moments here. And then there was a VK3HJQ, and I think there was a station trying to come in there as well.
Whiskey 4, Kilo Echo, Juliet, Tennessee.
King Baker 3, Japan, Queen Queen, KB3JQ and Q.
November 2, Mike, Juliet, Zulu, Fred, and Florida.
Victor Echo 3, Romeo, Zulu, Oscar, Reno, and Toronto.
Coming in from Tennessee, if you could come in one more time.
Whiskey 4, Kilo Echo, Juliet. Whiskey 4, Kilo Echo, Juliet, Tennessee.
Okay, got you that time.
KM4, UJP, Kilo Mike 4, Uniform, Juliet Papa, coming to St. George Island, Florida. Did you get me net? Over.
And this is VHV Cash. I did that time round. I got you out.
Echo 3, Romeo, Zulu, Oscar, Reno, and Toronto.
And Reno, I've got you in too.
Kilo Bravo 8, Bravo Mike Yankee, KBH BMY near Olympia, Washington.
And I've got you in as well. Thanks for joining us. I'm going to hold it here for one sec. I'm going to have a call here just before we start the next. I'm going to run through the topics for tonight. Through the topics here for this evening, and right after that, I'll take another few check-ins, and after that, we'll start things off. The first two, they're here each week in the sky this week, Science Trivia Corner right after that. And first one here, maybe the Big Bang wasn't the beginning of the universe. New research into white holes, which is the opposite of the of black hole. Black holes as particle accelerators. Asteroids around Venus, there's some concern that some of those may be due to hit us, not anytime soon though. Earth's energy imbalance is actually way out of imbalance now, and it's getting worse. We'll talk about that a little bit too. NASA's budget to be slashed, that has some pretty huge implications. Reconstruction of a dinosaur's life based on its footprints that were left behind, its gait. And cannabis. Cannabis may be bad for a person's heart. Now, I'm not giving out any medical advice here tonight, but just a report that came in just recently about cannabis. And a bobcat kills a python, Candace, C-H-V-K-K-E. She sent this in. But this was an interesting one as well. And a mega tsunami that actually it really shook the world back in 2023. We'll talk about that in a bit, too. And a 100-year-old American sub that was found. That was one from last week. We didn't get a chance to cover that one, but I thought I'd bring that one in tonight. So that's a roundup for tonight. And just before we start things off here tonight, any additional stations you'd like to join us, come on in.
DE3, Victor, Romeo X-ray, Dave in Toronto.
Victor X-ray, Tim here in Scarborough.
November 2, Mike, Juliet Zulu, Fred.
VE5RS, run Saskatoon.
VE3, Victor, Romeo X-ray, Dave in Toronto. My previous transmission may have been choppy.
That should be got in. You haven't acknowledged them. KB3JQQ.
And Scott, yeah, I've got you in there, KB3JQQ. Fred, I got you in earlier, and had Reno in there as well. There was VE3VRS, had you there, Dave. Tim, I have you there too, and VE5RS.
Victor Echo 7, Lima Oscar Golf, Mike in Tampa, BC.
And that station there, BC, I have you as well.
Sorry, Victor Echo 7, Lima Oscar Golf, Mike in Tampa, BC.
Yep, and I've got you in. Thanks for joining us.
Victor Echo 1, Echo Papa with no traffic.
And Emil, I have you in too, VE1 BC. All right, well, let's start things off here for tonight. And as I always do at the beginning of the net, a little bit about HF propagation, space debris, a little bit on asteroid passes, and then we'll move into the sky this week, and then the science trivia corner. Solar wind started to die down. We've had a lot of solar activity, solar storms happening. Solar wind has died down a lot. At 429.8 kilometers a second late this afternoon. Once you get above 500 kilometers a second, you're getting into solar storm territory. So it's come down quite a bit. The photon flux, not very high, 3 photons per cubic centimeter right now. Solar flux index, 128, sunspot 6. And we had the clusters AR 4105, 6, 7, and we had 4099 in there too. So even the sunspots, not quite as many now. There's still a couple that are big, but not huge. HF propagation, still reflected in the, still reflecting what's going on with the sun. It's just dropping. 80 and 40 meters, poor during the day, fair at night. 30 and 20, fair both day and night. 17 and 15, fair both day and night. And 12 and 10, fair during the day and poor at night right now. Space debris. Lately I've been covering up a lot of the reports coming in about the amount of space debris that's being produced in space. We've got satellites going up, constellations going up all the time, those are, over periods of time, are producing more debris up in space. Crowding of space now is getting to the point where collisions may start happening between now and about 2050. But once we get to about a critical density around 100,000 objects up in space, I'm not talking about things that are breaking up, but satellites that we're sending up, then you can start to expect some of these satellites to start crashing into each other and producing more debris, which is referred to as a Kessler syndrome, and that in turn produces more debris after that. So we're getting to that critical density. Space debris, 30,661 objects were tracked globally today. And from week to week now, if you're following this, you'll see on the numbers I'm giving are going up. They're staying up around 30,000 now, as opposed, let's say, even 6 months back, they're close to 28, somewhere around there, 1,000 objects tracked. For my location today, I always use this for some context, 2077. So lots of stuff up there, and more going up. And lots of things that are happening, we're not just dropping. Aside from the fact that we have all this this cloud of debris up there and technology, it's the interference it poses for scientific research, particularly radio astronomy and even some optical astronomy. And because some of these objects do emit RF, and a lot of our RF, although it's very low, it's still much higher than the background radiation coming off of some deep space objects. So interference in, from that, and lots of concern. Asteroids. I always pick a couple of asteroids that are coming closest to Earth during the time of the science map. It's dropping. And today we had 2025 LM, 0.6 lunar distances away. And lunar distance, that's just the distance the moon is away from us. So just a little over half that distance, 0.6 lunar distances, 8.9 kilometers a second and 6 meters in diameter. We also had another one, 2025 LK, and that was 0.3 lunar distance. I was even closer, 10.3 kilometers a second and 15 meters in diameter. It's dropping. And there's many more. There's many more of these on any given day. I always pick the two that are closer. In fact, there's more than that today that have passed by, but I just pick the few that are closest to it. And both of these, although they're coming close, neither one of those, even by the size of them, wouldn't pose much of a problem. I would suspect both of those, particularly the 6-meter one, the 15-meter one even as well, would, if it entered the atmosphere, probably end up as an airburst. I don't think either one of those would make it to the ground. If they're stony meteorites, no, they wouldn't. If they're metallic, maybe have a better chance of hitting the ground, but not by much. Stopping. Not a lot. This week I thought I would just stick strictly to some of the UFO sightings that have been spotted for May. So this would be a May report on UFO sightings. And I include this when I can, simply because that's what they are. By definition, if you look up, you see something, you don't know what it is, it's been classified as a UFO. I'm not making any distinction about what it is. I'm just reporting what people are seeing and the shapes they're seeing. Before we go into this, any additional stations, come on in. And UFO sightings for May. And there's many more countries that have listed UAPs or UFOs. UAPs is the new acronym they give for unidentified aerial phenomena. Both mean the same thing. But I just picked the ones that tend to have the most sightings for any given science net. So the U.S., 342, U.K., 21, Australia, 20, Canada, 11, the Philippines, 1, Brazil, 13, and France, 8. Just dropping for a sec. And the most common shapes that were reported for these, well, a circle 89, a sphere 63, oval 28, a disc 23, tic-tacs 16, a cylinder 12, a boomerang 8, and a chevron 2. And some of these reports could very well be even military aircraft they're seeing, or even some experimental military aircraft that's being developed. And that's it for In the Sky this week. And probably next week I think I may include along the lines of what's up in the sky. You can go and take a look planet-wise, nebula-wise, things like that. I try to pick things that are easy to see with just rudimentary equipment. You could have just binoculars, a very small scope, or just going out and just looking up. So lots of fun things to see just even looking up. But that'll be for next week. If there are any comments or check-ins, come on in, and then the Science Trivia Corner. And those of you unfamiliar with that, it's a two-part. There's a quiz, and then there's a trivia. And the quiz is just trivia as an FYI. It's not a quiz meant to stump people or anything like that. It's just trivia posed a little bit more interesting way than just the straight trivia. I put it as a bit of a question, just to have some fun with it. So before we get into this, any additional stations, comments, come on in.
Echo 3, Kilo Delta Charlie.
Omar, V3KDC. I've got you in.
Very good, Ken. I got no traffic, just enjoying listening in. Back to you, KDC.
And Science Trivia Corner. Well, let's start in here. The quiz and the trivia. Now, the first the question here, the quiz, the first one here, it ties into, actually it's the only, I only have one trivia section here for tonight, and the first question actually ties into the trivia itself. And the first question is also an offshoot of a question that come up on one of our morning nets here in the city. Is dropping? And the question was one of our morning chat nets here at 11 a.m. And the question came in about why people in some of these really hot countries, other than for cultural reasons, tend to wear clothing that covers their entire bodies. And we were discussing the reasons for that, exposure to sun, etc. But I thought I'd put a little bit of a twist on that tonight. And people who live in hot, sunny climates, as I mentioned, I'll often wear clothes covering their entire body. And, of course, it helps to protect from the intense sun. But what negative effect can it have other than heat-related? So other than heat-related, what negative effect could it have covering their entire bodies?
Station.
Air station, come on in.
Vitamin D.
All right, so you say vitamin D. Who else would like to take a try at this? Other than heat-related, when people are in the hotter climates, hot, sunny climates, when they're covering themselves over, what negative effects could it have, other than heat-related? All right, well, for this one, and Gary, BA3GDZ, if you're listening, I did not forget the question that you posed earlier this week, which is why I've included it here tonight in just a bit different form. Actually, it's vitamin D. And a little bit more about that in a moment, too. Got a couple of more questions right after that into the trivia, which is a tie-in to this first one here. Second one, radar. The term radar, an acronym. What does it stand for?
I don't remember the middle A, but I want to say radio something distance and ranging. I can't remember the second letter, though. ADC.
Okay, I've got that. So radio something and ranging. Got it. Okay. Anyone else?
Whiskey 2, Juliet, Lima, Sierra. Radio detection and range?
Okay, got you. So radio detection and range or ranging. Gotcha. Anyone else like to try? Well, actually, that's what it is. Radio detection and ranging. A lot of acronyms, things out there. Sonar, scuba, laser, etc. The next one here, name some animals that don't contract rabies naturally. So name a few animals that don't contract rabies naturally. And again, this isn't a quiz to be testing people or anything like that, nothing like that. Just have some fun with some trivia here. Animals, name some animals that don't contract rabies naturally.
The 3GSX, an opossum.
Zulu, Lima, 2, Bravo, Echo, Zulu, cows, I think, don't contract rabies.
I beg your pardon? You said what animal can contract? The question is, name some animals that don't contract rabies, naturally, and you're saying, was there an animal you're mentioning that did contract rabies?
Again, no, it's Zulu, Lima, 2, Bravo, Echo, Zulu. I think cows, Charlie Oscar whiskies, do not get rabies over.
Okay, so I copy that too. All right. Anyone else like to try?
Rabbits. E3 KDC.
See, we will agree with Allah.
Kilo Charlie 5, Mike Oscar November. Fish.
And we had in there for fish. And rabbits and opossums. They tend to be resistant, opossums anyway, tend to be very resistant to rabies, even rabbits, mice, even things like that. But they can catch rabies. Fish, reptiles, birds, amphibians, insects, naturally they can't be infected with rabies. There have been some lab studies that have purposely infected birds with rabies, but it's very, very, very hard to do. Rabies, it attaches to receptors specific in mammal nerve cells. And animals, other than mammals, they don't have these receptors. So fish, amphibians, lizards, all that sort of thing, insects, they don't have those receptors. Bats are another. Bats, they do contract rabies. Bats are one of the animals, they contract rabies, but they don't die readily from contracting it. They've got a really hyperactive immune system that helps them, but bats, yeah, they're notorious for carrying them, but they tend to be hardy even when they do have it. Just dropping. And that's it for the quiz and the trivia ties into the first quiz question for tonight, and we're talking about folks who wear sort of head-to-toe clothes in the warmer, sunny climate. just drop in. And this has to do with many of the folks with darker skin, and some very interesting things here. And during revolution, keeping cool, that was pretty much a priority, particularly when you're in hot tropical areas. And what this meant developing more sweat glands and less hair. And there's a bit of a trade-off here. Less hair means sweat evaporates quicker and we cool faster, but less hair also means more skin exposed to sunlight. So UVA, UVB are damaging to the skin. So to get around this, our ancestors living in hot tropical regions developed darker skin. Melanin, it's a brown skin pigment, helps people in the tropics deal with UV strapping. And it's actually a natural sunscreen. And UV, it can also strip away folic acid, which is an essential ingredient. It can strip that away from the skin. And when ultraviolet radiation penetrates the skin, we develop vitamin D. You hear people say, go in the sun and get some vitamin D. It's not like you're actually absorbing it from the sunlight. It's developed in your skin, just dropping. There's a chemical in our skin, it's 7-D-hydrocholesterol, and when UV light hits it, it turns it into what's referred to as a pre-D3, and this pre-vitamin D3 isomerizes in our skin. It just means that it doesn't turn into another form of a chemical. Its atoms just arrange a little bit differently. It's still vitamin D3, but it goes into a different form that we can now use. So when UV hits our skin, it develops in our skin. So vitamin D is very important. So in order to produce just the right amount of vitamin D and maintain the proper folic acid levels, you need to have this fine balance, balancing act in exposure to the sun's radiation. And this explains why people that migrate to areas globally where there's less sun develop lighter skin color. And moving away from the equator favored lighter skin to deal with lower UV levels. And skin reflectance, we're talking about skin reflectance here, people around the world support this theory of UV absorption levels and vitamin D and folic utilization. And another thing that affects the skin is dropping. Another thing that affects the skin is skin color is diet. People in coastal areas who eat seafood, they take in an alternative means of acquiring vitamin D. And this means that these people can still retain a darker skin color even if they're far away from the equator. So their skin is not trying to adapt to a lighter shade so it can absorb more sunlight to the proper amounts of vitamin D. And people in North America is dropping. People in North America are often deficient to some degree or another in vitamin D simply because of where we are. In the winter months, we tend to, particularly in the winter months, we tend to be tilted away further than the sun and we don't get as much sunlight, even at other times of the year, same sort of thing. We just don't get enough sunlight up here, the same intensity as we do at the equator. All right, so that's it for the Science Trivia Corner for the week. And this is VH3KX. If there are any stations out there, if you'd like to join us, if you have a comment, come on in. And then I guess we'll start into the main topics for tonight. And the first one is it's a new theory. There's a lot of theories coming out about where the universe or how the universe began. The standard theory of the universe, standard model, shows that it developed through a Big Bang model. There's other theories out there. The Big Bang model is our best model right now. It fits all the important aspects of the physics that can create the universe. But there are other ones out there too. So this other one here is a new one that's come out. It's a take on an older theory, but it's that the Big Bang was at the beginning. So before we start, any additional check-ins, comments, come on in.
Well, good evening. Here is KC8. FQV, Mark in Ohio, United States.
And Mark, it's KC8FQV. I've got you checked in. Thanks for joining us. Well, I should have mentioned earlier on than that before I got carried away here. Tom, BH3EVWX, he does a climate update. Either way, He's been away for a couple of weeks. He will be back probably in about another week, I would think, and he'll be joining us again for the climate update. And he's putting a little bit different twist on the climate update in comparison to what he did in the past. He does a little bit different now. He does include everything he's talked about in the past, but he includes a few other things in there, too, so he'll be back. I should have mentioned that at the beginning of the night.
Victor Echo 3, Delta, Delta Romeo. Dave, out of Bentonville, Ontario, no traffic.
And Dave, I got you into E3 DDR.
VA6, TBO, checking in.
Heck, I've got you checked in.
WK2, Delta Yankee, checking in.
And Robert, I have you in there too. All right, let's start off with the first main topic for tonight. And as I go through the topics, the idea behind these is two things. One, I stop at the end, and you may have a comment you'd like to make, or some additional information about something I'm talking about. And two, it might be something interesting enough for you to want to research later on your own. We have several nets here during the week. And there's a couple of them here, the Nostalgia Net, and then there's a Skynet on Friday evenings. And there's a few others as well during the day. And I often pick up something new on all these nets. There's people coming in with all types of information, and there's always something new to learn. So purpose of the topics, you may have a comment after I'm done with them, may have something to add, or you may just file away and want to look up a little bit more about it later on. First one, it's about the possibility the Big Bang wasn't the beginning of the universe. And most science books describe the Big Bang as the explosive beginning of existence. It was at that point that space, matter, and time emerged from basically nothing, but this infinitesimally small point that's referred to as a singularity. And new questions coming up, whether our universe came from something more radical than the Big Bang. There is a new paper, it was in the journal Physical Review Deep, proposes an alternative to the Big Bang. And the new theory states that the universe didn't start with the Big Bang, but was the outcome of collapse or a gravitational crunch that created a massive black hole, where a balance occurred inside it called a black hole called the black hole universe. And the accepted standard model is it's centered around the Big Bang and the cosmic inflation. Cosmic inflation is a period of incredible spatial expansion followed by incomprehensible explosion resulting in everything that's familiar to us. And that was about 13.8 years after the Big Bang. And the model, however, it leaves scientists with at least some scientists scratching their heads. For example, the Big Bang begins with a singularity of infinite density where all physical laws break down. That in itself suggests the science has not got the beginning of the cosmos completely right to dropping. The singularity in mathematics is really just a point you've reached in mathematics where your answers aren't giving any meaningful answers because the data in them is the data being put into it doesn't have meaning. They're the same with the singularity with the Big Bang. That's where all the laws of physics break down, and even relativity breaks down at that point and doesn't have an adequate explanation for it. So singularity actually shouldn't be able to exist in nature, at least the way it's described for Big Bangs in the beginning of the universe, simply because you're talking about infinities. However, the scientists then explain that the universe large-scale structure in terms of very rapid phase of expansion. And this is called the cosmic inflation, and no one really knows what forces powered it or the whatever strange properties it may have had. Other than the fact that they think it may have resulted from a quantum field of fluctuation very early on in the universe. Quantum fields were there before the Big Bang, before the cosmic inflation, and it was at a what you might refer to as like a steady state. It was just very even, just dropping. There's no energy coming in, no energy going out. But then something happened. Something happened to cause it to change its energy state. And I always use this as an example. You got a bowl of jelly on a table, and it's set there and set, and you look across the room, you can see it's not doing anything. But you go by and give the table a bit of a wiggle, and you can see the jelly starting to undulate. Same sort of thing may have happened with this quantum field. Something started undulating and suddenly gave the universe a little bit more energy. But anyway, so as I said, nobody really knows what forces powered this period or even the properties it had with the cosmic expansion. And the slow but continuing expansion right up to this day, it's thought to be a form of some mysterious force called dark energy or repulsive gravity, which is right now the primary focus as to why the universe is expanding, dark energy. And the standard model gives a good explanation, but it's not a complete one. It's dropping. This new model, which is just a theory at this point, suggests that an overly dense collection of matter may have collapsed under gravity, much like a star collapsing into a black hole. You've got a star sufficiently big enough, it'll at some point in time collapse into a black hole. Our sun isn't big enough to do that. What goes on outside a black hole is reasonably well understood, but what goes on inside is still a big mystery. Still a lot of guesswork there. People talk about what goes on inside a black hole, you get spaghettified, things like this. No one actually knows for sure what's going on inside a black hole. Roger Penrose, a physicist back in 1965, showed that under general conditions, gravitational collapse leads to the formation of a singularity. Stephen Hawking, he later on extended that idea that Big Bang singularities are unavoidable. They happen over and over again. Singularity theory depends on classical physics, or relativity. And that describes, relativity describes the macroscopic world, the inclusion of quantum mechanics, which deals with the microscopic world, may change the story of the cosmic beginning. And the new paper suggests that a gravitational collapse does not necessarily need to end in a singularity. The mathematical solution shows how a collapsing cloud of matter can go into a high-density state, then bounce, resulting in a rebound outward into a new phase of expansion. And Penrose's theorem won't allow this this outcome due to what's referred to as the Pauli exclusion principle. And that just means that no two identical particles can occupy the same quantum state, angular momentum, things like that. So you can't compress things down to the point where things are occupying the very same space. And this rule stops particles in collapsing, matter from collapsing indefinitely. And because of this, the collapse stops and reverses. Under the right conditions, this seems to be inevitable, according to the new theory. And because this balance happens within the constraints of general relativity, there's no weird fields, extra dimensions, or uncertain physics are required for this. And the balance results in a universe that's very much like ours. Inflation and dark energy emerge as a product of this balance. The theory produces a universe with a very small curvature that could be testable, just dropping. There's a Euclid mission. If that could confirm this curve, then that would lend strong support that the universe did, in fact, come from a gravitationally induced bounce. And the black hole universe also gives a new perspective on our cosmos. It says that the entire observable universe sits inside the interior of a black hole created from a parent universe. Therefore, the universe didn't come from nothing, but is the result of a continuing cycle. Dropping. And the theory is, it sounds good, until it's testable, you can't disregard it. But it does have some flaws. And the model does, as I said, it has some flaws, particularly when it comes to gravity and how it behaves at the level of a singularity. It doesn't address that properly. It also lacks a lot of clarity regarding dark matter and dark energy and information preservation or destruction inside a black hole. So they're still working on this as a model, and They do have some ways to see if it's testable, so until they can, then it's just that. It's just a theory. This is the A3KX10 here, the Science and Tech Net, for this Saturday evening, my home location here, Toronto, Ontario, Canada. If you'd like to join us, you have a comment, come on in. And then the next one, there's a new research paper about white holes, explaining white holes, which is the opposite of a black hole. Sometimes on the net we've had some discussions going back and forth about black holes and white holes. And the interesting thing about both of them is that black holes are thought to be like these cosmic vacuum cleaners where matter gets sucked inside, you never see it again, that's the end of it sort of thing. And then there's the white holes, which are the opposite of black holes, and that white holes, they're all predicted in relativity, that they actually spew matter out, just dropping. So the idea is a black hole, and there's some question, some big question as to whether it's actually a singularity the way it's described right now in classical physics at the center of a black hole. But matter going into a black hole, once it reaches a particular area within the black hole, let's see where the classical singularity resides, that area could be connected by a wormhole to a white hole, meaning that matter goes in, passes through into a white hole, and gets spewed out into another universe. And there's another theory regarding that, saying that's maybe how our universe got started, which would also give some credence to the proposition of a black hole or a singularity. The black hole, all this material got sucked into a black hole, reached the singularity, and got pumped back out into another universe or a newly created universe by way of a white hole. But this one, it's a new paper, it's just explaining some different facets of white holes. If you'd like to join us, any comments, come on in. And this next report, it's actually a bit of an adjunct from the previous one I talked about, the black hole universe. And the gist of this theory is that a white hole may come about from the quantum bounce inside a black hole, which would send both matter and time out from inside it. One big issue with black holes is that at some point the flow of time stops. That's not really correct. When you hear reports say that the time ceases inside a black hole, it really doesn't. It's just dropping. It gets to a point relative to an outside observer to appear to stop at some point, but to those entering or inside the black hole, time is just going on as it normally would. So it's all relative. Just drop it. Time is generally described as being relative to an observer's passing of events. The new theory suggests that time is a product of dark energy, which flows throughout the universe. And this is a study from the University of Sheffield in the UK. In the case of dark energy, time would be measured within its accelerated effects on the universe. And black holes are basically just regions of space-time where matter transforms into densities that are so extreme it becomes necessary to describe it in terms of a singularity, which really doesn't necessarily work out properly in physics. So it's a point of infinite density. Black holes, they're the result of the collapse of a massive stars, and as their fuel runs out, once this happens, their mass, it can't support the outward radiative pressure and the inward effects of gravity. So the outward radiative pressure now, because it lost so much mass, is taking over from the gravitational effects that are trying to cause it to collapse back in. So they cancel each other out. And the area of space that is created by the resulting collapse is so great that light can't escape the gravitational effects. And so once matter gets close enough to the event horizon of a black hole, the black hole devours it, and it never escapes. Or so was thought. A white hole, on the other hand, would have a singularity, but a different type of singularity, that would, instead of drawing matter in, would spew it out. Right now, there's no evidence. There's no evidence that black holes exist. But mathematically, there's no reason they can't, because relativity also includes it. By evaluating a planar black hole, planar black hole, as described in relativity, is an event horizon that is flat and not spherical, so it's like a big pancake. And that would be in a version of a universe where spatial dimensions resemble a saddle or a Pringles chip. And this is a variation of our spherical universe that is basically flat inside. In quantum mechanics, time can't end. As long as systems keep changing and evolving, general relativity tells scientists that the gravitational field around a singularity has an infinite force. And just about done with this one here. So examining this further, and you realize that these type of infinities can or should exist really. However, there might be some loopholes that explain singularities in a way that makes sense. Instead of a singularity at a black hole center, the region is an area of huge quantum fluctuations of space-time. The black hole then transforms into a white hole. Where the singularity and horizons are defined as regions of extreme quantum fluctuations where time doesn't cease or fade, but it bounces back and forth with information contained within it. So a black hole in that case wouldn't be ever losing information. And this new theory, it's just that. It's a theory. But if true, hypothetically, you could go into a black hole and through a singularity and come out the other side of a white hole and be in an entirely different universe. And this is the A3KX, Ken here. This is the Science and TechNet transmitting from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. We're here each Saturday evening, 9 p.m. my local time, so that's 0100 hours GMT. And if you'd like to join us here tonight, if you have a comment, come on in. And the next one here is kind of a fun one. It's about black holes, but using them as particle accelerators. This is kind of a fun concept. If you'd like to join us, you have a comment, come on in.
Yeah, BA3WXW.
You there, Ken, and everybody around the net tonight. And I'm just, I'll be here, but I'm on the side. And back to you. Have a good week. B3IQU.
And I had WXW, and I had IQU, Reg. And the previous station, it's checking energy. Do you have a comment?
Yeah, sorry, VA3WXW, Bob here. Good evening, Ken, and all on frequency. Yeah, interesting regarding black holes. I've always had a penchant for physics and space and time and energies and whatnot myself, and I like to I subscribe to the holographic paradigm theory of the way that the universe works. But anyway, interesting theories. Yeah, I've heard others comment that, you know, other papers comment that white holes are actually suns. Suns are the white holes, and that suns are these strange craft that are being seen are using to fly distances. But anyway, cool stuff. And I comment on the black holes. I thought that they had imaged one directly through gravitational lensing, did they not? I thought they had imaged them not only in radio, but in optical.
Gravitational lensing with black holes, in what regard? Were you referring to discovering them or gravitational lensing? I didn't quite catch that.
Roger. Well, I thought they were, I thought you had said that they weren't actually detected or proven to exist. However, I thought they had imaged them both in radio frequencies, X-rays as well, you know, et cetera, as well as optical through the lensing effect, you know, behind, coming in front of stars and whatnot. It's, you know, how it bends light around the event horizon.